Stories open our mind and world to possibilities, opportunities, and realities. Some stories inspire you. Some stories define you. Some stories create you. Some stories nurture you. Some stories pose the questions. Some stories provide the answers. Some stories take you to a dream world. Some stories bring you back to the real world. Welcome to the podcast StoryPod with Nishchala. In this show, you can tune into stories from amazing people across the world. Through these stories, you will listen to ideas that matter, real world insights, and positive inspiration. I am Nishchala Murthy Kaushik, Chief Marketing Officer at HFS and your host for this podcast. In the series, The Shiro Diaries, you will listen to stories of women leaders across the globe, their personal life and career journey, choices and decisions which influence them, and reflections from these experiences. Are you ready for stories that can change your life? In her role as Chief Financial Officer for HP, Murray Myers is responsible for all aspects of the company's financial operations, including accounting, financial planning and analysis, business decision support, tax, audit, treasury, and investor engagement. Prior to being named CFO in February 2021, Murray served as HP's Chief Transformation Officer, focused on delivering cost savings and implementing technologies, tools, and processes needed to advance HP as a digital leader. Our first segment of the podcast is Know Your Shiro. Here, we get to know our featured Shiro. We talk about backstories which helped her get here and forward-looking stories on where she is headed. Welcome to the show, Murray. Thank you so much for doing this podcast with us today. So hi, Murray. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. And it's a great to meet you. I hope you're doing well too.
Yeah. So Murray, let's start the conversation with, going back in time together. If we do a time travel together and maybe, go back a little to your childhood, I'd love for you to talk about what was the role of your family in shaping your belief systems and outlook to life.
You know, thanks. It's a great question. In fact, I grew up in the bush in Australia, and my family, really played an influential role, I think, as every family does, in influencing who I am today. I mean, first of all, we grew up with, I think, a very deliberate understanding of hard work. My father always said it's sort of like, 99% perspiration and 1% inspiration. And so I've sort of used that as my backdrop in life. And I've always worked, I think, incredibly hard and, realized that, of course, inspiration is important. It sort of, is the fountain of ideas. But for me, it's been, sort of the backbone of how I think about life and working hard and sort of bringing your whole self to everything that you do has really been the mantra that I've followed throughout my lifetime, to be honest with you.
That's great to hear, Murray. I guess hard work is a lesser fashionable skill today, but I think, you're right. Nothing beats good old hard work. I mean, there are no shortcuts to many things in life, including success. And I guess it's important that people recognize that, especially young talent. So thank you so much for bringing that up. Okay, so Murray, just moving on, if you kind of look back at your childhood and your upbringing, what do you feel were the most important life moments in those early years, which probably shaped, your thinking and, how you look at the world and how you make choices and hence eventually played a part in where you stand today?
Yeah. No, look, as I said, I grew up in this very small town, less than handful of people, less than 100 people in Australia. And so I always had this desire to see the world. My mother was Italian and from a sort of migrant family, and my father, second generation Australian. So I grew up in a multicultural house with a strong sort of connection back to Italy and back to Europe. And so I always had this desire to travel, to see the world. I knew that the world was much bigger than this sort of small, the smaller horizon that I had in the bush. And so my first big move was when I left my hometown. I was actually the first kid that graduated from my class. I elected to go to a public school, and I pretty much did, you know, correspondence in subjects such as economics and advanced maths, because there were no kids in the school that wanted to do it. And so I really wanted to pursue an academic success. And so I chose to basically, you know, learn out of a book for 2 years, and I pushed myself. I had no kids in the class. And it was these kinds of experiences that really just, you know, they gave me the courage to be ambitious and to really push myself to get out there and learn. And so I graduated from high school. I was obviously the top of the class and, you know, probably the star student, to say the least. And I was the only one that went to university. And I went to, deliberately chose a university that was a bit of a landmark in Australia. It was a really prized institution to get into. And I remember going there, and it was at the time probably about 20 to 30,000 students. And I came from this small town, less than 100 people, like I said, doing correspondence. I remember going into my first sort of lecture, and there were 1,000 students. And the teacher, the professor said to us, look to the left and look to the right. By the end of the year, neither of you guys will be here. And it was just shocking to me. And I was so scared by this, I started crying, and I just couldn't comprehend, you know, the scale and the magnitude of what I'd walked into, to be honest with you. So it was a really shocking experience, but it was a really great lesson. It was one of the biggest transitions in my life. And I'm eternally grateful for, you know, the education, because I pursued, you know, I was determined to get a great education, and that's exactly what I got.
Wow, Marie, that's an amazing story, honestly. I mean, you know, I'm inspired by listening to you. But, you know, the one Thank question you. Which came to me when you were speaking is, it's very hard, you know, to kind of envision a path which you've not seen or you've not heard or you've not read about, right? So yeah. I'm just a little curious to know, like, what were those internal drivers or motivation for you to even choose very consciously at a very young age, walking down a road, you know, that you haven't really seen or heard or traveled or anyone has actually walked down before?
I think I was genuinely intellectually curious. As a kid, I was always, you know, I was an avid reader. I was telling my kids, I just came from dinner with my children, I'm always on them because they don't seem to read enough. I lived in my dreams. I suppose I lived in books, and it was the books that sort of opened my eyes to the world. And so I pretty much, you know, if I told you the books I was reading at, you know, when I was 11 and 12, you know, I read Anna Karenina. Not if you know, guys even read that today, but, you know, Tolstoy when I was extremely young. So I was just always fascinated by the world. And so I used to read about the world. You know, I did actually want to, originally I wanted to be an archaeologist. So I have a personal passion for paleontology and archaeology. But I was always motivated to really go back and live in a different part of the world. My mother had told me the stories of her life. My grandmother had told me the stories of her life. So, you know, I felt like there was a big world out there to see. And, you know, it was my driver. And, you know, I wanted to have an opportunity to have a great education, because my mother had an education and she had lived abroad but had come back and gotten married. And she always said to me in life that, you know, having an education, particularly as a woman, gives you an opportunity to have choices. And I really resonated with that, because I had realized that particularly a lot of the role models that I saw, you know, at that era, a lot of the women didn't have choices. And, you know, my father's sort of stepmother was a brilliant woman. She was the one who really, you know, gave me her library to read. And she was just very smart, well-educated. And so I suppose I looked up to her and, you know, really admired the intellectual drive that she'd gotten from, you know, literacy, so to speak.
Wow, Marie, that's an amazing story. So, Marie, I'd like to shift the focus a little bit to your career and professional journey. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, some of the key highlights of your career and, you know, some of the most important career choices you made and some reflections from those choices?
Absolutely. So, look, I've had a long career. You know, I feel, first of all, I've had a long career. I'd start out by saying that, but it's been an incredibly rewarding career, one that's been marked with some amazing experiences. I'm very grateful for the opportunity that I've had, because, you know, my career started at a very young age. I graduated from university After I finished two degrees, one in liberal arts and another one in economics, and I was working. I had my first job as a graduate economist when I was 21. And even from the very first job I have had, you know, they were just very memorable experiences. I feel like I've gotten something out of every single role I've had. And, you know, I think that's important about work. You have to enjoy work. Work shouldn't be like work. Work should be something that fuels a passion, whether it's, you know, a passion in finance, whether it's a passion in, you know, invention or medicine. I think you have to get an intense amount of satisfaction from what you do. And I've been fortunate that, you know, I've always found myself in situations where I've had just that. I'd say one of the biggest transitions for me and some of the highlights were really going back to graduate school. I started at 21 and then I went back to graduate school in my late 20s. And it was one of those sort of tectonic moments because it helped me to sort of shift gears. I wasn't really happy with the direction my career was taking in the early 20s. I joined a graduate economist program in the government, and I just didn't like the bureaucracy of the public, you know, the public institutions. So I wanted to find a way out, and the MBA helped me sort of change direction, and I found my way into work in the technology sector. And sort of once I found my North Star, which was really international business, I've just sort of flourished ever since. And I've just done a tremendous number of roles since then. And one of the highlights being, you know, really having the chance to split HP more than 5 years ago. It was like the world's largest business splitting a $120 billion company back at that time. And it was just a huge sort of mental high for me, for you know, in terms of just the opportunity to do that when I had two twins in diapers at the time.
Wow, Marie, you know, honestly, kudos to you for you know, everything that you've done. I think you've had a very successful and inspiring career, and more importantly, you know, probably being at the helm of doing maybe one of the most exciting career assignments when you were a mother of two. So, you know, truly, truly inspirational for anyone who's listening into the show.
The second segment of the podcast is my personal favorite. We talk unfiltered stories about leadership, skills, life choices, career decisions, and people that matter. We also dwell into ideas about how to build diverse and inclusive organizations.
So Marie, you know, I'd like to start this segment by asking you, what's the best part about being the CFO of a company?
I think what's exciting about being a CFO these days is it's a very strategic role. You know, I think in the past, CFOs were sort of the guardian of, you know, pretty much it is the guardian of the numbers, and their role was probably defined very much by that. But I think today the CFO's remit is so much broader than that. You know, a CFO has an important role to play in digital transformation, in sort of guiding the company's overall direction. And, you know, I think today that a successful CFO needs to not just be a, you know, financially numerate, but they need to be, you know, operationally savvy as well. So to me, it's this that exciting combination of that very sort of broad set of skills that's brought together with, you know, financial and business acumen. So I just think it's like the icing on the cake, for me at least, in terms of where I'm at today. I feel like I'm drawing on all the experiences that I've built over the last several decades.
That's wonderful, Marie. Like I said when we spoke at the start, you're the first woman CFO that I'm actually speaking to. So I'm actually proud of the fact that you know women leaders are also you know sort of helming or leading the CFO function. But, you know, I'd like to talk a little bit now about, you know, women at the workplace, you know, and it's a topic which is extremely important because I think thanks to the pandemic last year, you know, I think we've taken multiple steps behind across the mm-hmm. world in terms of just women's participation in the workforce. So I'd just like to, you know, get your thoughts on what do you think is the most important thing that needs to be done to create positive and purposeful, you know, sort of, you know, measures to create a gender equal future in 2021 and beyond?
Sure. No, it's a great question and something that weighs heavily on my mind as a mother of two girls. First of all, I start out and say that the pandemic has really created, I think, you know, and in fact, I think mothers, particularly women, have shouldered a lot of the, you know, the family caregiving responsibilities. There's no doubt about it. You know, there was a, I think, a general acknowledgement that a lot of women have stepped out of the workforce because they were trying to balance the sort of online schooling and their careers. And that is, to me, it's frankly, just, there's no other word I can say, but it's tragic. And it's really hard. I know my kids have been online through most of this pandemic, and it's really difficult. You know, my husband, LB, he does a ton, but he's, you know, I have to really get on him even to sort of, hey, have you checked our homework? Have you done this? Have you made sure? So it's hard as a working mother, because in many cases, you know, you switch roles and there has to be a little bit more equal weighting in those responsibilities in terms of caregiving and support for the children. So I think it's a real shame that in some ways we've seen women potentially take a major step back. And sort of to counteract that, you know, we need to be really intentional and I'd say vigilant in our efforts to, you know, to really increase diversity in hiring, because unless you get diversity into the pipeline right at the early stage recruiting, it's going to take years for this to change. And then obviously it goes without saying that we need equal pay, equal benefits for roles. I remember sitting with my oldest daughter one night when she was very young, and we were reading about Clara Barton, who is a very important, prominent historical figure in the US. And, you know, my daughter was reading the book and she said to me, "Hey, Mom, in the book it says that Clara Barton, one of her sort of tenants was, you know, equal pay for women." And she looked at me and said, "Is that even a problem?" And I suppose I was so taken back to think that, you know, my daughter didn't even realize that women had really had to fight for equal pay. And I was kind of really pleased about that, because she just felt that obviously in life everything was equal. And whereas when I grew up, I just knew that, you know, my generation, women were taught to go and work in the bank. You were never going to be the bank manager. You were going to be the bank teller. So, you know, the fact that my daughter even thought that wasn't even a realistic proposition, I was pleased that, you know, the world has obviously moved on. But there's just so much more to be done. We need equal opportunities for career progression. And then most importantly, you need flexibility in the workplace. As a mother of three kids, I stayed at HP because of the phenomenal flexibility that I've had and the ability to, you know, take time out of work when my kids were young or when I was pregnant and I was not well. I had a company that wasn't going to look down on me because I, you know, I had to take care of my kids. And I think that's important. That's what kept me at HP really for a better part of all these years.
Sure, Marie. Thank you so much. I think that's a very sort of, you know, holistic answer, because I think, you know, the change has to happen at multiple levels. You know, I think, you know, at a company level, and it's not just about the work we do, but it's about, you know, treating us as, you know, individuals and recognizing that we all as women need to play different roles in life, and at different life stages, we have different priorities. So I just feel like ecosystems, support systems, and, you know, solutions which, you know, consider you as an individual, mm-hmm. and then account for how your life could evolve, and hence, you know, be sensitive to the career choices you make, is extremely, extremely important, you know, for having women continue developing or thriving in long-term careers. So thanks for sharing that. You know, you did mention about, you know, ensuring, you know, a lot more awareness on how we are developing the hiring pipeline or talent. But is there anything else in your view that organizations should do or must do to build more diverse and inclusive organizations?
Well, first of all, you know, and actions and words need to line up. I think a lot of organizations, sort of particularly coming through the pandemic, have started to, you know, it's become a little bit more fashionable, so to speak, right? The whole concept of D&I, but it has to be just more than sentiment. You know, it has to be, people can say you can be diverse, but you're not really inclusive, right? It has to be real. It has to be authentic. It has to be a business imperative. You know, what I love about HP is that it's always been part of the culture of our company. You know, we've always had a very open, diverse sort of pipeline. We've drawn from diverse points of views. You know, the company as a whole really reflects that. So, and it starts, you know, one of the things I always like to do is look at the board of a company. You know, a board of a company is like a lens or a window into how the leadership of that company is really thinking. And what I loved when we, you know, I talked a little bit about the split before, where we split the company, we had a deliberate intention to create one of the most diverse boards in the technology industry. And that's exactly what we did. And we have a phenomenal CHRO who sat down on a course to really recruit diversity from the get-go. So if you look at our board, you know, it's got a, you know, almost 50%+ women, people from all races, very ethnically diverse, you know, diverse in terms of backgrounds as well, and in terms of where people live. And it makes a tremendous difference. And that flows through the organization. So it has to be an authentic commitment, and it really has to start with tone at the top. And then finally, you know, we need to embed diversity, equity, and inclusion into everything we do, and really ensure that, you know, our employees are held accountable to support that strategy as well.
So thanks for highlighting that. Marie, I'd like to now, you know, flip the conversation to, you know, what women can do, right? Of course, you know, organizations can, you know, have policies, processes, systems, and very consciously try to build a more diverse and inclusive organization. But I feel it's also important for women in the workplace to ensure their own readiness to take on some of these positions, which are probably up for grabs. So what, in your view, should women consciously do to maybe, be considered for some of these roles or just be considered as leaders? What are the skills you feel they should consciously develop as they progress in their careers?
Well, look, I think today, you know, there's been a shift in skills and in terms of, like, you know, what the workforce is really sort of rewarding. And I think some of the newer skills are really, there's a couple of core components that I think the pandemic has really sort of put a spotlight on. And one of those that I'm very passionate around is just the whole area around digital. So getting yourself digitally literate is really important. And I think what I tend to see is that particularly women sort of shy away from exposing themselves to technology. It's been a very male-dominated area. And, you know, I was actually the CFO of a robotics software company before I came back to HP recently. And it gave me a chance to really become very deep in software and in, you know, particularly sort of areas of AI as well. So look, you know, being digitally literate is so important. And it's, we're really on this cusp of this fourth industrial revolution that's taking, you know, sort of playing out around us in terms of digital transformation. So getting those skills and being, you know, right up and current in terms of what's going on is really, you know, I would encourage all the women to do that, whether it's learning how to code, whether it's learning how to, you know, write in Python. You know, these are skills that you just need to nail. Second to that is, you know, I would say that having, you know, great EQ, you know, today, you know, emotional intelligence gets, I think, a lot more visibility. And so, you know, having sensitivity, putting yourself in people's shoes, other people's shoes, learning to listen, really important skills for leaders. And, you know, today I think they're getting recognized more as competencies. In the past, it was sort of like, yes, those skills are important, but, you know, the weight that those skills play, particularly, you know, as you see social issues have been given a new platform in the pandemic. And so thinking inclusively and holistically is now more important. So these are just areas that I think I would encourage women today to really reflect on, look at yourself and see whether or not you're putting time into these areas and these categories.
Thanks, Marie. I think these are very useful for young women professionals who are probably just starting off their careers, or even, you know, women who've been in the workforce, because, you know, our podcast is heard by women across the world and, you know, at all women at all stages and phases of their career journey. So I think these are very universal and very, very important skills. So thank you so much for sharing that. Marie, you know, I'd like to now talk a little bit about your own, you know, personal leadership, you know, story and journey. You're a mother of three and, you know, you're the CFO of, you know, one of the, you know, largest technology companies in the industry. So I'm just curious to know, like, how do you manage to successfully navigate between your professional commitments and personal responsibilities? What approaches, solutions, support systems, or even technology have you used and you feel has helped you immensely in just being able to do justice to both these responsibilities?
Well, I'd just start out by saying, I think, look, every working mother has to juggle priorities. And, you know, that's just a sort of a starting point. You know, look, I'm a mom to three young kids, you know, wife, you know, and it's a complex set of relationships you've got to manage. So this means sometimes, you know, I just can't take a call at a certain time of night because I really, you know, what I've done, I've been very deliberate about putting some boundaries, you know, when it's bedtime for the kids, when it's mealtime, I try to make sure that I'm always there for mealtime most of the time during the week. And so these are just, you know, sort of mental guardrails that I put in place, and I manage that by doing something as simple as just blocking my calendar at certain times and making these sort of sacrosanct, you know, moments that you know you're just going to commit to. But I try not to hide the fact I've got kids at home. I'm not going to compartmentalize who I am and say, hey, I'm a perfect person because I'm like a robot, I'm working 24/7. Well, that's simply not the truth, right? I mean, I really am going to spend time to do, you know, what's important to me with my family. And so you have to be able to sort of put those guardrails out there and be willing to be comfortable with who you are. And that's not easy. The other thing is, I think, you know, it's really important to work for a company that gives you that kind of support. And that's one of the things I've always loved about HP. You know, it's a company that really allows you to balance, you know, family and a career. And finally, in terms of your system, you know, you need to have a support system. You know, my husband and I kind of agreed early on in my career, you know, how we were going to work at home and what responsibilities he would take on, what responsibilities I would take on, and how we'd get, you know, help where we needed it. And so that's the approach we've taken. And you need the, you know, they say it takes a village to raise a child. And I think it's incredibly true. So I'm not, you know, going to say that I get to attend every single event. I prioritize what I think where I need to be. And there's some things, honestly, I just let go of. I know that I'm not going to be able to make a home-cooked meal every night of the week, so I'm not even going to try to deal with it. You know, I find a way to prioritize where I can spend my time, you know, and make sure that not everything gets done, but it gets done to a level of satisfaction that may be just good enough sometimes. And then in terms of technology that I use, I mean, I have little sort of let's just say systems that help me get through, whether it's I like to use, you know, I have a very structured calendar that is sort of like the mainstay of my life. But then on top of that, I've always used technology, whether it's bots to help me with email. And then I sort of, you know, add in lots of apps that I use to help me get current on issues and news. I use Blinkist. I was an early subscriber to Blinkist. I like the fact if I want to kind of just get snippets of a book, I don't get all the time to read the books I want, or I'm interested in an issue, I can go and listen to Blinkist while I'm out walking. So I think you've just got to find a system, build a support system. And then today, technology is out there. It can help you with scheduling and keeping yourself organized. So why not take advantage of that?
Sure, Murray. I think what specifically resonated with me is, you know, drawing clear boundaries. I think a lot of us struggle with, you know, just drawing boundaries between work and life. And then, you know, being very, very vocal about it and, you know, sort of, you know, sharing about it with maybe people at work, your colleagues, your teams, that you know, that's important. I've seen a lot of women shy away from talking about it. So I think that's very important that you said that it's important to share that very openly, saying that, you know, these are the boundaries and this time is sacrosanct for family, and just being respectful about, you know, those boundaries. And the last point, which I specifically liked, is, you know, I think just letting go of perfection, right? And just embracing that imperfection is fine. And as long as, you know, you can go to bed at night with your definition of, you know, an imperfectly perfect life, I guess it's all fine.
Exactly. That's a great, I love the way you captured that. It was very nicely put. Thank you.
Thanks, Marie. So my last question for the segment, Marie, is around health and wellness. I think if there's one thing that 2020 has shown us all is that, you know, we shouldn't be taking our own health and well-being for granted. I also strongly believe that, you know, having good health is very, very important for your career longevity and even success. So I'm just curious, you know, what do you do on a regular basis for your own health, and how do you kind of, you know, manage to weave it all into your otherwise really busy and hectic schedule?
Look, I first of all start out by saying, I think, you know, health and wellness should be the foundation to anybody's life. You know, if you're not healthy and you're not eating well, then it's very hard to be really successful at what you do. And to have that sort of mental clarity you know, I'm a big believer in sort of the foundation of mental health and sort of wellness and just generally eating very, very well. So I have always dedicated every single day. I am religious about exercise. There's probably not a day goes by when I don't spin or walk or bike ride, you know, to really sort of anchor myself. And I have used exercise as a way to collect my thoughts, to set my priorities. And then in the morning, you know, since the pandemic, I started doing walks with my husband. So we typically get the kids ready for school. And then I take a break and he and I would go off and walk. I'd get up, do email, and then walk with him. And it's a great way for us to connect, catch up on the day, and then sort of connect with the family in the evening by eating healthy meals. So, you know, I think building exercise and just walking during calls. Another thing is I have a colleague, a friend of mine who was the CEO of a company. He literally walked all day, every day during the pandemic. I think he walked, I don't know how many millions of miles. And he just said, oh, I'm going to walk during all my Zoom calls. And so he would literally get on the phone. You would see him there with his phone on a board call walking. And so I think you have to find different ways to approach it. But there is the opportunity, I think, now with work being more flexible to be able to integrate, you know, exercise into your life. But it's just so important. If you're not mentally strong, it's really hard to have the ability to get through the day.
Absolutely, Marie. Thank you. And I agree with you. I think it needs to be integrated in your life. It needs to be a priority. And I guess as you age, you realize that, you know, it needs to be done every day, right? There are no shortcuts. So you can't just slack off exercise for 3 months and say, I'll pick it up from where I left off.
It doesn't work. You have to start all over again.
Yeah. No, that's great. So I started my journey with yoga last year. And honestly, I think it's one of the best investments. You know, I call it an investment because I just feel it's one of the best things I've done for myself. It just kind of, you know, puts me at a different level of thinking, at a different level of functioning. You know, it affects creativity, productivity, you know, just your own ability to deal with high stress situations. I truly recommend some form of exercise to everybody who's listening in as part of your everyday life. So thanks, Marie, for sharing that.
Our third and last segment of the podcast is the rapid fire segment. We look forward to hearing quick and quirky stories from our guests.
So Marie, who is the best boss you have worked with and why?
That's a great question and a tough one. And I have to say that probably I'm going to put Enrique Lores down there. He's just a great boss. He's just so level-headed. And Enrique is the CEO today of HP. I'm not sure you know that, but I just really enjoy working with Enrique. I feel like we have a great sense of understanding between each other and, you know, just incredible honesty. And it's just a very, very easy and enjoyable relationship.
That's wonderful. From bosses, we move to food. So which is your favorite cuisine in the world?
You know, I love all kinds of food, but I'd have to say, I'm not going to give you one category. I'm just going to say what I really like the best is spicy food. As I've gotten older, I love hot, spicy food. It is my most favorite food to eat.
That's wonderful. So I hope you eat something spicy for dinner today. My last question for the show is, will you ever dance in a meeting, Marie?
So I not only would, in fact, I just did recently. We had a transformation organization all-employee meeting and they started playing one of my favorite songs. And then, of course, I had to dance. So yes, of course, it's a no-brainer question for me. Any opportunity to dance, you got me there.
That's wonderful, Marie. And I wish you dance your way through success and the rest of your life and have a wonderful, wonderful future and career ahead. Thank you so much for doing this podcast with us, Marie. Really appreciate your time and inputs and insights and authentic conversations. Thank you.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure. I've really enjoyed spending time with you today. Thank you for the opportunity.